Nathan gave me a choice of texts to read today, and then he asked me to take the epistle text, which is the most difficult text. It's a section right out of Paul's letter to the Corinthians, and it's a little piece where Paul has given advice to married women, to married men, to folks that are unmarried, to slaves, to masters. It's Paul trying to say that in this business of being Christian, there are social dynamics at play, and we have to learn how to engage these social, cultural dynamics in the light of Jesus and how this changes. And then in the lectionary reading, the lectionary folks pull this little snippet out. And so one of the things that I teach my students is a text without a context is a pretext. You got that, right? But this little lectionary piece is a text without a context, but I pray to God the sermon is not a pretext. So I've been reflecting on this text here this week, and this is what I have noticed about what Paul is saying. And it connects with some of the themes that we reflected upon last week. So the Apostle Paul starts with an assertion. He says in the 7th chapter, I assert this, the time itself is contracting. Time itself is wrapping up. Something is happening to this business of reality, and it's contracting. I asked my wife for examples of things that contract when they get wetter. They're put in the sun. I imagine you can think of these things, but here's the point of this whole thing. Reality as we know it, the world as we know it is socially constructed between our ears. It is not something that God gives. Please understand this. What we call human culture, relationships between male and female, relationships between people of different color, or people of different sexual orientation, or people of different faith traditions, are all constructed right here. God does not give these social constructs to us and say, whites have the right to dominate blacks or indigenous peoples, men have the right to dominate women, parents have the right to oppress children, etc., etc. None of this is given by God. And so when Paul comes to this business of social relationships, he says, look, this business that we understand by human culture, this world, he says, is passing away. The way we've constructed reality since the dawn of time, as we've evolved from primate to human, as human culture has developed, the way we see reality is on its way out. Something so startling, so new, so absolutely unthinkable has entered the scene. And that's this. The maker of all things, the maker of life, has come and become as one of us, walked as flesh, lived human life. The creator of life suffers death. This is unthinkable. And so we have that same theme in this text that we did last week. The world as we know it is passing away. In 1962, you will remember that some of you, most of you will remember, that the world stood on the brink of a nuclear war. How many of you were alive in May of 1962? How many of you remember those days when President Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev of the Soviet Union both had their finger ready on the button to launch nuclear weapons? And they've made written books about this. They've made movies about this. 10 days in May, we almost wiped ourselves off the planet almost 50 years ago now. Think about this. We almost ended civilization as we know it. So when the Apostle Paul says, the world is passing away, we ought not to think that he's being a lunatic or thinking things that are unreal, because the fact is, friends, we humans now have the capacity to end life as we know it. Whether it's nuclear weapons, biological weapons, chemical weapons, hatred, war, prejudice, resentment, bitterness, all these things are tied together and give us the capacity to end life as we know it. And the Apostle Paul's advice is this: look, when it comes to being a Christian, when it comes to following Jesus, what counts is not whether you're a male or a female. What counts is not whether you're married or single. What counts is not whether you're a master or a slave. What counts is not whether you're a colonizer or an indigenous person. What counts is not whether you're an adult or a child. None of these things count. We put value in these things. We are the ones that decide what counts. We've always done this. And in the 20th century, we've finally begun to realize this doesn't work anymore. Jesus has come to say to us, there is no Jew or Greek. There is no male or female. There is no place in human relations where we have anything of value other than the fact that God has said that you and you and you and you and you and you and me and you and you and every single person outside those doors counts. Everybody belongs. That's the gospel. So when you're walking down the street, and I did this on purpose, and I'm going to take this off for a moment. When you're walking down the street, and I've done this in Melbourne since I've been here, I've noticed all kinds of people. And I've made value judgments about them. I've noticed whether the color of their skin, their ethnic identity, how they dress. Do they dress fancy? Do they dress like there are tourists? Do they dress nice? Do they have a business suit on? I've noticed whether people wear crosses or crucifixes, right? You know, you see this? Do you know what this is? Anybody? Can you see this? Is it a cross? Is it a cross? Would this identify me as a Christian if I was walking down the streets of Melbourne?
No.
Would you say, oh, that young man? That fat old grandpa? The piece of jewelry I wear around my neck is a Maori symbol. But you wouldn't say, oh, he's a Christian. You might think, oh, he's a pagan. The clothes I'm wearing, do they identify me as an American or an Australian? Hey, obviously. My accent. Or rather, I should say, your accent. We speak the president's English in the United States. Here's the thing. We are the ones who construct reality right here between our ears. And we make value judgments based on this reality we construct. And the apostle, there's so much more. I only have another 7 minutes, but I'm going to shift gears for my. I need like 7 hours. You really do. To really get Paul is you want to see the flow of these of this anthropology, this understanding of being human that run through his letters. It's a marvelous, remarkable thing. But I'll just shift gears for a second. He says to the married, if you're married, be as though you are not. Now, I know some of you are going, yes, thank you, God. To the unmarried, he says, don't be acting as though you just can't wait to get married. To those who are shopping, he says, and he says this, if you're shopping or purchasing something,
Don't be like those who think of their life as consumed by possession. To those who are slaves or employees, don't wish you're the boss. Here's the bottom line in this. What Paul is really talking about in this business of socially constructed relationships is desire or wanting things. So, for example, we drove into the city today after a weekend away, and we stopped for gelato somewhere on Ligon Street, and we got out, got our gelato, walked to the park, and sat down in front of this incredible black Porsche. Beautiful car. And all of us thought, wouldn't it be lovely if we could own this car? And I said, well, if I was to own a car, it would be a Lamborghini. We're walking back to go get in our car, and what's parked behind the car we're going to get in this little red Toyota thing, right? What's parked behind us? A yellow Lamborghini. How many of you have today, just today, used the words, I want? How many of you have used the words, I want? Thank you. We've got some honest folks in the room. Sure. I guarantee you've all done it. I want something. What we've done when we want something is we're owning something in here that says we're not satisfied. There's a hole here. And if you are into the kind of research that I know that Nathan does and that I do in terms of my what we call mimetic anthropology, what you recognize right off the bat is human beings are essentially nothing more than copy machines. We are copying each other's desires all the time. I want you to like me. You want me to like you. I want you to be friendly. You want me to be a good preacher. Good luck. I want my wife to be a certain way. She wants me to look a certain way. I want a certain thing for dinner. You might want something else. The point is, everything that we want, we've learned to value from someone else. We've learned to value it from our experiences with other people. Did you grow up with a parent who ever said to you, I want you to blank? You ever grow up with a parent that did that? I did. My whole existence was oriented toward meeting the wants of my mother. Whatever my mother wanted, Michael did. That was my life. Paul is saying to us, when it comes to being a Christian, when it comes to following Jesus, we cannot focus any longer on our desires. Desire or wanting is a problem. It is the problem of the human condition. Desire, wanting, is what creates rivalry in relationships. Desire, wanting, is what creates war. Desire, wanting, is what creates resentment when the other person gets it and you don't. Desire, wanting, creates bitterness. The fundamental problem of the human being is desire. And that's why Paul says to the married, don't wish you were and think in terms of being married as though this is your life. Don't self-identify with this social construct. If you're single, don't self-identify with that social construct. If you're white, don't self-identify with that social construct. If you're Native American, if you're black, if you're indigenous, if you're Japanese or Korean or Brazilian, don't identify with that social construct. These things, ethnic labels, gender distinctions, these are all right here between the ears. What we are called to do is identify, self-identify, simply as those who are followers of the crucified, who, in taking baptismal vows, which we've all done, take up a cross every day and die. We die to our own desires. We die to our own wants. And we live as though the world is ending now. There's nothing important in life, not the paycheck, not the house, not the neighbor next door that has something that we want. We live as those who are completely free of being labeled and who label. We no longer need to do this. The only label that we have that works for us is that we are those who are forgiven and who forgive. That's why the central symbol of the Christian faith is a cross. The cross is about the one who says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. And that's why the central liturgical symbol of the church is right here in the Eucharist. It's where we are forgiven. This cup is the new covenant in my blood, shed for the forgiveness of sins. And it's why we forgive each other. The most difficult thing in the world to do. We celebrated 50 years of marriage with you folks last week. Remember that? And wouldn't you say you had, it's difficult when you're, I mean, I'm talking after 34 years of marriage here, so I'm hoping you'll say yes and amen to this. Maybe marriages are different in Australia than they are in America, but I don't think so. Wouldn't you say one of the most difficult things you had to do over and over again in your marriage was for someone to say, I forgive you? Was that true? Those are hard words to say when you're hurt.
At least when you're
alive. Yeah. Right. But they're hard words to say when you've been wounded. But this is our life. This is our existence. Not the social constructs, not the desires. We live as forgiven people. That's who we are. And because we are forgiven, we forgive. That's what Paul is really trying to do here with the Corinthians. He's saying, don't worry about all the things you worry about. They don't count. They're passing away. Time is contracting. The world is over. There's something new here. Something new. Something wonderful. That is our desire.